Hello, and welcome back to Literally Literary. If this is your first time joining us, be sure to check out our previous episodes. This episode, we are continuing our discussion on The Ones Who Don't Say They Love You by Maurice Carlos Ruffin. In this episode, we will be discussing the collection with Maurice himself.
Hello, y'all.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good setup.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for agreeing to do this. We really appreciate you taking the time today, especially on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We really, really enjoyed this book. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wasn't here last time, but
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is my first time meeting you. So nice to meet you.
Well, thank you. I heard you. Thank you for saying you enjoyed the book.
I loved it. We loved it so much. We have a few questions for you that we won't want to take up too much of your time.
Okay. Well, I have as much time as you need. So here I am.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, so you said it, you know, we loved it. I absolutely loved the collection. And I think you chose such a great epigraph. You know, I'm such a jazz fiend. And so the fact that you went with the Alice Marsalis, right? I thought it captured it so wonderful. Like, I guess the whole reason for the book, who you're talking about, the characters and where they come from. It just personifies it so well. Did you already kind of have that quote in mind for it? Or did that come later on when thinking about, you know, what Marsalis is talking about, you know, not from coming on high, but bubbling up from the streets as kind of where your stories come from?
Yeah, that's a great question, Richie. I think that what he says in that quote is something that so many New Orleanians feel, especially African-American New Orleanians. So it just feels natural to me. So I'm not even sure that I knew he had said that, which is interesting because he actually, my wife worked for him like 25 years ago when we were in college or something like that. But when I came across the quote, which was later in me editing the collection, I thought, oh, that's exactly it. You know, New Orleans has actually, we have a lot of wealthy people, but those people are kind of off the grid. You know, they have, you know, regular day jobs and, you know, they send their kids to school and, you know, they live their lives. But like New Orleans culture, which is so much about like our people who, you know, make the music, make the food, mm-hmm. Make the clothing, you know, make the language. We have Mardi Gras Indians who are their own sort of distinct culture. Those things are all street level things. Those are just like working class people who drive buses and work in hotels and work in restaurants and then create these cultural artifacts that change the world, that lead to people like Louis Armstrong or Irma Thomas or Lil Wayne or whoever you want to name. So when I found the quote, I was like, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's such a great way to start off the collection. So thank you for that, including that.
So my question was about the characters. So these characters, even though these short stories are really short, these characters are like really developed. So I was kind of wondering a little bit about your process in creating each of these characters.
Yeah, there's something that writers, poets and writers often say, because I heard people say yesterday at a conference I went to, the New Orleans Book Festival, and this poet, Charisma Price, said, my poems are smarter than me. And I've said the same thing about my writing. Like my novel is smarter than I am. I'm pretty smart, but, you know, my stories are smarter than I am also. I think what we're trying to say is, you know, we sit down and maybe people might call it the muse visits you, but the way I think about it is that I'm just trying to hear the voices of these people. You know, I've grown up in this community in which, like, these are the voices of, like, my cousins and aunties and neighbors and coworkers. And I'm trying to take myself out of the equation and just kind of go, okay, you know, who is this person and what are they trying to tell me? And, you know, in the process of doing that, I mean, frankly, it's a lot easier than writing it in sort of like a very distant third person where I'm creating everything from scratch. I'm just trying to channel these people's spirits as best I can.
I love that.
Yeah. So Vanessa kind of alluded to this about some of these stories being, you know, really short, kind of like sudden fiction or fast fiction. So I was wondering if it's easier or harder for you to write those really short stories versus like the lengthier short story model?
Oh, that's a great question, because it may sound counterintuitive. I think that a short story is harder to write than a novel, because a novel gives you a lot of space. It's like jogging pants. You know, it's not like you're trying to pull off your figure or something like that. So you can be a little discursive and sort of take your time. Like, I love this podcast. Whenever I listen to your shows, like, you're always like very laid back. I'm like, all right, just having the conversation. This is lovely. So I really appreciate it. You know? I think that most readers expect in most short stories that it's very tight. Like, there's a certain structure or a plot that's almost obvious to the reader. You know, we're starting off here, we're going to go there, we're going to this other spot. But then flash pieces are weird because they probably are, in a strange way, harder than novels to make them like effective and make them effectual. But I know from my experience that I can like sit down and you know, have a cup of coffee and like write a flash piece in a first draft in like 20 minutes. And it's probably like, you know, 90% done in that first draft. So I really do love flash pieces because I can just get in and get out, and they tend to work very, very well. So one example is that, you know, late in the process of writing the book, I was just thinking of different stories to write. And one of them was the story Token that's in there. Another one is Bixby, two of the shortest stories in there. I think Token's like 2 pages. And I just like wrote that like probably like in March of 2019 or so. And it just came from nowhere. So it required no forethought. It required very little afterthought. It was like just being in the moment and almost like freestyle. And so I just love that sort of feeling.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites, Token. I think we talked a little bit about how it's sort of a nod to Jamaica Kincaid's Girl, and but more real, like contemporary feel to it. So that, yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites. Most effective, like you said, even though it's so brief.
Yeah, and you were right on point when you said that about Jamaica Kincaid. In fact, really, I should put like a little note on it, or like, you know, after Kincaid, because it's not written. And I think in later drafts or later print versions, I think I'm going to have them add that to it, because, you know, she is the guardian angel of that flash piece.
Yeah,
that's very well put. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
But we've talked about that on when discussing not just this book, but also We Cast a Shadow. Is just one of the great joys of reading you and being literature majors and those of us who've studied and have degrees, it's just really fun to see you working with some of the canon tradition, things that you've read. You know, it's just really fun to kind of see, and then doing what you're doing as well, adding to it.
Yeah, I think that as a writer, maybe more than some writers, I really rely on my predecessors and my mentors, these writers that I have read and loved for a long time, and always kind of thinking like, well, what happened if I did my take on that? How would my vibe sound if I tried to write a short story based on Toni Morrison's recitative or something like that? I just love it. Look at that, kind of going, that's really cool. I'm gonna try that myself. I want to try that myself.
We're doing on the questions.
Yeah. Do you want to ask about the gentrification?
Oh, right. Well, I mean, so, you know, you talk, I mean, New Orleans and people are so important to this whole collection. And, you know, we were thinking about the last piece before I let go. And so I was just curious, you know, how much of that you've related to. You're from New Orleans and just kind of these, seeing the changes that it's going through. You talk a lot about like the tourism and how that affects. And of course, so I just wanted to share, I mean, if you wanted to share relate some of that with that story, like your personal connections to that story, and it's in particular gentrification, seeing neighborhoods come in and being taken over by trendier spots and people. And yeah, sorry, I'm kind of rambling now, but.
No. I totally feel it. Now, that story has a special place in my heart. I've never written anything quite like that. I had written some essays about gentrification, like 4 or 5 essays over maybe the past 10 years or so. But with that story, before I let go, I was very much thinking about, so that was one of the later stories I wrote. Like, I think I probably finished that story in 2020, or 2021 almost. So like the book's getting ready to get, you know, wrapped, put in the can, so to speak. And I just kept thinking, whose stories and whose voices have I not represented in this collection so far? Because again, it wasn't going to be like 19 Maurice Ruffin stories. It was going to be the people that I know or voices that I've heard. And so I just thought about it. I said to myself, you know what? I've never seen a middle-aged African-American lesbian woman as the lead story, like as the lead character in a story out of New Orleans ever. I mean, you think about all these sort of classical tales, like these plays like Streetcar Named Desire, or, you know, things about Faulkner, or, you know, other writers who passed through the city or who are from the city. It's such a rare thing. And so I kept thinking, all right, this character is going to be my lead character. What is her voice? My auntie's name was Gail. She passed a few years ago. Well, Gail, yeah, actually, so the same name. And then I thought, you know, what kind of problems were people in that demographic dealing with, maybe more than anybody else? There is a high percentage of Black ownership in the city. But then the sad thing is that because of Katrina and because of the economic crisis and because of really bad policies from banks, I can go on and on and on about that. You have a lot of these women who have sort of inherited these houses, and then sort of they're being pushed out, you know? And I've seen it myself, even as, you know, in my position where I would get a letter in the mail, or I get like a text message from some weird phone number. Do you want to sell your house? You know, mm-hmm. you can sell it right now for a good price, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought about this sort of tragedy of these women in particular who have fought, you know, generations to live their lives and to sort of stake their claim to this city that is, you know, it's their soil, it's their roots. Yeah. And then they have like some knucklehead from, you know, Seattle come down and say, yeah, I got all this, you know, extra money because I got an office in bank in Seattle. I'm gonna buy like 25 houses and then move you out and move somebody else in. Hmm. So it's a very American story, whether it's yeah. like, you know, Native Americans being taken from their land, whether it's, you know, people who had been enslaved, whether it's how we treat other immigrants. It's very American. And so to me, I don't even see it separate. Like when I read work by people who are talking about those other topics, I'm thinking it's all the same universe of ideas.
Mm, got you. Yeah, well, thank you for that. And again, going through all these stories, we're amazed by, I'm amazed. I don't want to speak for you guys, but I'm sure it's the same thing, right? Yeah. Just to write in all these different voices. Mark of a true writer. So far from people's responses to the collection, have people like really fallen in love with any particular characters and want to like maybe hear more from them in the future?
Oh yeah. You know, it's weird because there's a story in there called Ghetto University, which mm-hmm. is one that I wrote. And it's probably like the most, like the vibe of that story is very related to the vibe of my novel, We Cast a Shadow. So, you know, folks who don't know, Ghetto University, lead character, African-American professor who's lost his job and he's trying to make rent, and him and his wife are trying to figure out how to make some money. And he's like going to the French Quarter in a hoodie because it turns out that people are so afraid of a Black man in a hoodie in the French Quarter, they start throwing money at him. So he's making money with these sort of fake robberies. And that story has like a satirical tone and like a lot of twist in it. And mm-hmm. when I tell you, I tried to publish it. Nobody wanted to publish that story. Like literally, even like with my agent helping, they were like, yeah, we can't publish, this story is too far out. I've gotten more like DMs from people on Twitter and Instagram about that story saying, man, this story is off the chain. From like all the time, from like, you know, white grandmothers and Latinx people, you know, overseas, like, oh, this story is amazing. So I'm a little surprised. I'm also not surprised by it because that story is very much, it's trying to like give you like the sort of problem. Like, you know, there's these issues with like economics and other things in the city. But then it's like so self-aware and it's like pushing your buttons constantly and kind of saying, you think you know where this is going to go. You have no idea where this is going to go. Mm. Just hang on to the ride and try and keep up. So it's a fun story to write. And I'm sure I'll return those characters one day. They're also based on a really old story called The Gift of the Magi from like 1902 by a writer named O. Henry. And similar story, a loving couple trying to give each other's gifts. And these twists keep happening in the story as it goes on. So it's close to my heart.
Yeah, we really did enjoy that so much so that we didn't even want to like spoil the twist when we talked about it on the show.
Yeah, we want everyone to be on the ride too.
Yes.
Yeah. What, talking about that story, what was it like writing about the pandemic during the pandemic for you?
So I will say this to you all and only you and not the millions of listeners out there, but there are two stories in the collection that have a pandemic aspect to it. You know, the other story is Rhinoceros, in which these two young teens mm-hmm. who are queer go down to a George Floyd protest in New Orleans during the pandemic. That story was very much written in the pandemic. The pandemic elements in Ghetto University were actually added later, because I wrote that story a bit earlier. And I kept thinking, with all the stories, they're all set in different times. I'm not always very explicit, but some stories are set in the 70s and 80s, some in the 90s, some in the 2000s. But with that story, I thought to myself, you know what? I definitely want this to be as contemporary, like as up to the moment as possible. So maybe it's around, you know, 2020, 2021, somewhere in that range. And to me, the pandemic is just one more layer of pressure the characters are dealing with. You know, it's already hard to make money in quote unquote regular America. Then you add in the pandemic with all these failures in the healthcare system and the weird politics around like masking and vaccination. And then the sort of paranoia between like somebody's coughing, will I die in the next, you know, 10 minutes? Somebody coughed near me, those sort of things. Mm. And then even like the sort of mask. I mean, he's wearing the hoodie and he's wearing a mask. So he's even more fearful. Look, there was an incident, I think, last month with this director, Ryan Coogler, who made the Creed movies and he made Black Panther. I mean, this guy's a multi-millionaire and successful and, you know, I guess like prize winning also. He goes to a bank and the lady's like, I think he's a bank robber. So when I'm making these things, I'm not making this up. Like, this is my imagination seeing what's possible in a nation that looks at Black and brown and queer people in certain kinds of ways. And we just sort of like taking a bet. And my bet in that case was so right. It happened with Ryan Coogler after I wrote the story. So these are real things in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think with that piece, you know, I mean, there's a lot of instances already too in the past. I had mentioned Henry Louis Gates Jr. getting arrested, trying to get into his house, and there's a Brent Staples piece too of wandering around the nighttime and how he affects space. So,
Do you want to ask a question about spinning?
Okay. So as we were reading the collection, one of the pieces that stood out to us was spinning, and we weren't really sure about its placement in the collection. So we were wondering if you could talk to us a little bit more about spinning.
So, yeah, thank you for the question. You know, the trend in short story collections over the past 20, 25 years has been to write these collections that are considered linked collections, so that they're in the same universe, the same world, the same set of characters, the same sort of concerns, and sometimes like even like the plot is continuing in different stories, like little subplots are being sort of brought out throughout there. And, you know, I think that in art, like artists are so unique and so different, you have to pick your thing. And so I knew very early on with my short stories that I did not want a linked collection. I want a collection that was so like variable and different as you move through it. Like, I didn't want to kind of go from a title, like in the fifth story, I know where this is going to go already. Mm. I want to surprise you as much as possible. So I couldn't think about like, what's more surprising than you reading the short story collection, and then like the ninth story is a poem, you know? and I'm not considered the poet necessarily, but I do like to write poetry. And so I thought, okay, you know, write this narrative poem. So there's like a storytelling element to it. You know, there's an actual plot in the poem, so to speak. And then also I kind of had to do it because that's one of my most personal ones. Like, you know, there's always the question, like, how true is the story? That story is very much my own life, but it's been poetized so that I'm sort of making it a little bit more expansive and poetic and with the language. But then, you know, credit to my editor, Nicole Counts at One World Random House. I asked, I'm like, you know, is this appropriate? Like, you know, will my hand get slapped for doing this? And she was like, no, this is great. You put it in. You want it in there? It's going to go in there. So it went in there and I enjoyed, you know, reading it in my book tour also.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it just it does have that effect that you described perfectly. Like, yeah, the placement is interesting, but it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so cool. I my follow-up question was about the editor, so I'm glad that you brought that up, because I know sometimes editors are like, no, this doesn't fit, or, you know, they make some of these choices, and but it's really cool that you had an editor that was kind of in your corner and allowed you to do that, because it really, and it's right smack in the middle too of the book, so I think it just kind of took us all by surprise, but in a really good way.
Yeah, thank you. I definitely give credit to Nicole, because there's different kinds of editors, and some can be heavy-handed or too laid back. I think Nicole was the perfect editor for this book, and, you know, not all writers can say this, but I have been very fortunate in that I've never published a book where I look back and kind of go, oh, I should have did this, I should have did that, or, you know, I had so much interference from the people, like the powers that be. In this book, Nicole did a fantastic job, and she was always supportive with what I was trying to do with it, and made me look better, to be perfectly honest.
Awesome. Okay. I can't see that part.
So I think this is one of our last questions, but it's about what you hope readers, even those that aren't from New Orleans, ultimately take and learn about New Orleans from this collection.
Yeah, you know, I remember on one of your episodes, y'all were talking about like the places you're from and the people in your lives and the books that you read that you identify with because, you know, they sort of fit into what you've experienced in your life. Mm-hmm. And I love those thoughts because I think that it's important for literature to speak to communities, to come from communities and speak back to the communities. You know, a book or a story or a poem is a mirror of the community. And so I feel this like special. New Orleans is weird in that, you know, we have so much interesting and vibrant culture, but in a lot of ways, literary culture has been suppressed in just different ways, from like economics and educational opportunities to the way that publishers treat the South within New Orleans in particular. And so I really feel like, you know, if I'm not writing these stories, they're not getting written. And all these different like, you know, things that you might learn in one of my books, for example, you just couldn't even learn it. And, you know, it's just, I think 2 days ago at the New Orleans Book Festival, I was talking to a table full of Black women authors, all of them like at least 20 years older than me. And, you know, they were sort of teasing me about like things that I don't know about my history in New Orleans. And I'm like, look, if y'all don't tell me, I'm not going to know about this. This came back, and this is where it got kind of sad. And said, look, we're all sitting on like 3, 4, 5 manuscripts. We can't get published because people don't want to publish them. And to me, I'm astounded by that because there's so much knowledge there. And so part of my job is to fight to get the work out there because, again, if I'm not doing it, it doesn't get done. And I want people to know that New Orleans is more than just, for example, it's more than like just Mardi Gras. It's more than just Jazz Fest. It's more than like, you know, whatever you see in the commercials that they show outside of the city. It's a very complex place in which the working class are people that have all of these stories that would make fantastic movies or TV shows or whatever you want to think about. And so, you know, if I see a show like Reservation Dogs, for example, I'm like, I've never seen that before. I have that same feeling about my collection where it's like people should kind of go, I've never seen something like the ones Who Don't Say They Love You before. And if I'm doing that, that's like, I'm doing my job.
And you are.
Yes. That was excellent.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, so the takeaway from that, write your stories. You have a story to tell, write them. Yeah.
Write your stories because nobody else can do it. You have to write your stories.
Well, we thank you for writing these stories. We feel like we've learned a lot about New Orleans, about its people. I really, really enjoyed it.
Can't wait for more.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah, there's more to come. And I thank you for your time. Like I said, I always enjoy your podcast. Y'all are great at this and keep it up. And thank you for having me on today.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Literally Literary, recorded at Power at the Pass, brought to you by Border Senses. This episode, we interviewed Maurice Carlos Ruffin. If you haven't read it, we hope we inspire you to pick up a copy. Join us on our next episode, where we'll begin discussing A Ballad of Love and Glory by Reina Grande. Follow us on Instagram at literallyliterary.ep and on Twitter at literallylitep.